Good afternoon. Welcome on in to Kildare Focus. You're listening to KFM. It is Thursday, the 19th of January. And just in case you forgot the year, it's 2023 because I've been thinking I'm in last year still most of this week. Coming up on today's show, we'll be speaking to Dennis Nocton, independent TD for Roscommon Galway. Many children in Ireland are waiting 13 years to see a dentist, and they're bringing forward a motion before the Dáil later today, calling for the government to immediately reform the public dental system. Then we'll be speaking to Roger Wallace. He's partner lead for EY Entrepreneur of the Year Ireland. Nominations for the Entrepreneur of the Year open today. Then we'll be speaking to Louis Bulger. He's club chairman in South Kildare Beekeepers. He'll be encouraging more people to take up beekeeping, and they will be holding training courses soon, so do stay tuned if you want to become a beekeeper. And then last, we'll be speaking to Geraldine Herbert. She's motoring editor at the Sunday Independent. The government is planning to introduce high-powered electric vehicle chargers every 60 kilometres across the nation's motorway network. So stay tuned if you do have an electric vehicle. And if you want to get in touch with the show, you know what to do.
Kildare Focus with Caoimhe Harney. Text or WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97.
Now, the regional group, the independent TDs, are bringing a motion before the Dáil later urging the government to take immediate action. It says underpayment has led to an exodus of dentists from the medical card scheme, leading to unacceptable delays in the system. And I'm joined now on the line by Dennis Nocton. He's independent TD for Roscommon Galway. Good afternoon, Dennis.
Good afternoon.
Dennis, tell us a little bit about this motion that you're bringing forward and I suppose the problems that you see in your own constituency.
Well, the reason that Cathal Berry and myself and our seven colleagues brought this particular motion forward is that we're now inundated with constituents who are in receipt of medical cards coming to us saying that they cannot get access to dental treatment. I had one constituent earlier this week who is on social welfare, who is a family carer. She contacted every dentist in County Roscommon, County Mayo and County Leitrim, and she could not get an appointment for a medical card patient in any of those three counties. Now, the difficulty is that people with dental issues, there usually ends up being knock-on illness in relation to other chronic illnesses such as heart disease, obesity, diabetes, which are having a huge impact right across our health service today. On top of that, we have a situation where we've 13,000 children on waiting lists for orthodontic treatment across this country. We have thousands of children who are supposed to be getting in primary school every 2 years a dental health check, which isn't happening. And we have people with disabilities who are in severe and ongoing pain who cannot access a dental service where they need to go under an anaesthetic. And for those people with intellectual disabilities, it is very hard to explain to them why they're in constant pain, why they can't get treatment. And right across our dental health services in this country, the system is falling down. The system and the situation has been ignored. We want to highlight it. We want to see the issue addressed and the resources put in to address that.
Okay. So people who have medical cards then, they're being turned away because they have medical cards. The dentists want to take just people who are paying from pocket. Is that it?
Yes, so under the Dental Treatment Services Scheme, dentists are paid a fee for the treatment of patients with medical cards. But that fee has not kept in line with inflation. And as a result of that, and based on the demand that they're having from other patients, a lot of dentists have withdrawn from that scheme. And as a result of that, there are very few dentists across the country now that are providing dental services to people on medical cards, which effectively means that the dental services are closed out to them. Those people not only end up with chronic conditions in relation to oral health, but there are knock-on impacts in relation to their other aspects of their physical health and sometimes their mental health as well, which puts a further drain on our health services. And what we're saying is that we need to put investment into our dental health services. We need to train staff to deal with the demands that are there. We need to put the investment into our orthodontic services so that we have a comprehensive dental service, regardless of income, for everyone in this country.
Mm. In regards to the flat fee that dentists get paid for medical card holders, Dennis, do you have a figure for that, and does it vary from county to county?
No, there are flat fees right across the country in relation to the dental services. Mm. And those fees need to be modernised and updated. But we also need to see more staff trained. For example, in the whole area of paediatric dental services, where children require theatre time to carry out very serious dental work, because of a lack of paediatric dental nursing staff, some of those surgeries cannot take place. Children are left with very debilitating conditions, lack of access to this. And, you know, that can be something as severe as a cleft palate. So, you know, we're talking about very serious medical conditions associated with the lack of access to dental care.
Okay. And the flat fee that's given to dentists, then you're saying it's the same across the board, which is interesting, because you would imagine, say, someone in Dublin who might be paying massive rent for their premises wouldn't have the overheads maybe as someone in Donegal or, you know, in the south of the country, Dennis. But in relation to not medical cards, to move away from that a small bit, I actually have an aunt who travels to Dundalk because her dentist changed. And for her to get the same treatment or the same things done in Nace was nearly €300 more. Like, I got a filling there a couple of years ago, €180 just for the filling. I went to a first checkup and then the next day was €180. So I suppose county to county, it's going to be very, very widely varied on the amount that you're going to pay for certain things, isn't it?
Yeah, well, if we look at that aspect of it, and this is something that we've addressed in our motion as well, both Cathal Berry and myself have addressed, is the whole area of claiming in terms of tax relief. And this is what's called the Med 2 form. So we're saying that the tax relief for dental work needs to be increased, but it also needs to be extended to other procedures. Because you're correct, in terms of dental work now, even the cost of the fillings has become prohibitively expensive for many, many people who are struggling with the cost of living. And if we can try and deal with a lot of these dental issues far earlier, make them more affordable for people, the overall cost will be less, but also there is a knock-on impact in relation to the rest of a person's physical health, which takes pressure on our health service, which we know is struggling at the moment, and we see it in our accident emergency departments at the moment, and we're going to see it later on in the year in terms of the chronic waiting lists we have for elective care in this country.
Dennis, it says here in the press release that you sent out today that some children are waiting 13 years to see a dentist. Do they not see a dentist in school? Because I know, I remember I used to go like once a year or once every 2 years to the local HSC centre.
Yes, and they're supposed to go every 2 years to the, well, originally the dentist used to call out, now you go into the local primary care centre. The difficulty is, because of a shortage of dentists within the public health service, there are some children who are not getting access to a public health dentist whatsoever. And for families that don't have the resources available to them, this is a prohibitive cost. On top of that, children are, under the Public Dental Health Service, supposed to get what's called Fisher Seals once they get their permanent teeth. And this reduces the possibility of getting cavities, of needing fillings, of having to have teeth removed. But if there aren't dentists to do that, those Fisher Seals are not provided to children, and the oral health of those children and the physical health of those children in adulthood deteriorates as a result of that.
Okay, yeah, I remember getting the Fisher Seals myself. So basically, many children are not being called for these dental appointments at all.
They're not getting appointments for these dental appointments because there is no dentist to carry out those particular appointments. It means that children who need orthodontic treatment for medical reasons are not referred on for that. there are other medical issues that can be seen from an oral examination that are not being identified in both children and adults, particularly oral cancer in adults. And as a result of that, you know, people can become very sick and sadly die as a result.
So what kind of reform are you calling for then this evening?
Well, look, we want to see this whole area prioritised. And like both myself and Cathal have been engaging with the dentists, engaging with constituents in relation to this. And we want to see investment put in, not just in terms of the fees, but in terms of the availability of services, in recruiting more dentists, in recruiting more dental support staffs within our public health service, as well as putting investment into the orthodontic care for children.
Okay. Just one quick message in here, Dennis, that you might be able to answer. I think you kind of already did cover it. 0833 97 97 97. More freebies for people on the medical cards. Are they going to do anything for the working folks? I suppose you said that there. You are going to look for a tax break in relation to dental fees.
Yes, we are looking for an extension of the tax relief rate and the services that are covered. But as you know, under Sláintecare, and every government party and opposition party in the country has signed up to it, the intention is to extend the medical card scheme to every single adult and child in this country over time. And in fact, the SRI came out with a study earlier on this week in relation to the costs of that. It's felt that if you provide people with access to a medical card or free access to GP care, which is the case in many countries across Europe, it does reduce pressure on the acute hospital services, on the A&E departments, and it is money that is well spent in the long term. And the intention is of everyone to ensure that we can provide people with access to that type of care. And what we're trying to do in the interim is try and take pressure off the private dental services, ensure that there is competition there within the private dental services, reduce the final cost to people that are paying a huge amount of tax and getting nothing for that today, but also ensuring that it takes pressure off our health services, because investment in dental care for everyone has an impact in terms of the numbers of people on trolleys, the numbers of people in emergency departments, the number of people in hospitals, and that benefits every citizen in this country.
Okay, well, that is independent TD there for Roscommon Galway, Dennis Nocton, bringing a motion before the Dáil later today alongside Kildare South TD Cathal Berry, calling for the government to immediately reform the public dental system. And I'd love to know if anyone in Kildare has been to the dentist recently. How much did it cost? If you have a medical card, were you able to get an appointment? 0833 97 97 97.
Kildare Focus with Caoimhe Harney. Text or WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97.
The EY Entrepreneur of the Year programme 2023 is officially open for nominations today. Entrepreneurs from emerging, established and international businesses operating across all industry sectors across the island of Ireland are invited to submit their nominations. And I'm joined on the line by Roger Wallace. He's partner lead for EY Entrepreneur of the Year Ireland. Good afternoon, Roger.
Good afternoon, Caoimhe. Thanks for having me on.
Of course. Roger, the theme for this year's programme is the art of entrepreneurship. What does that mean?
Yeah, thanks, Caoimhe. So, you know, we look at entrepreneurship, it's not easy. People are creating, they're innovating, they're doing things by themselves, they're putting their creations out in the public domain, you know, very often to be assessed by, you know, by their sector, by funders, even by employees. And it's not unlike the station that artists hold, where they're, you know, they very much are creating. You know, entrepreneurs as well, they do more than build businesses. They help us create the culture, the ambition in our society. And again, I think there's distinct lines of parallel with creating something new from an artistic perspective. So we are challenging our entrepreneurs this year to think about creating their own masterpiece and come join the EY alumni.
Okay, so when you say across all sectors, does that literally mean it can be someone who has started their own restaurant, their own cafe, maybe a new, I don't know, cycling shop, or, you know, like literally anything?
All sectors. You know, over this is our 26th year of the UI Entrepreneur of the Year now. And of course, we have technology companies and life science companies and things that you might kind of commonly read about. But a huge amount of hospitality businesses, as you say, you know, foods and restaurant and food production, you know, consumer product businesses, clothes, beauty products, you know, from the general area in Kildare, you know, the likes of the manufacturing of paint with General Paints Group, a super business, Roy River Brewing there in Selbridge, Pestle and Mortar, who do, you know, facial care and facial creams just outside Newbridge, three brilliant businesses that are examples of the types of companies that that have been successful in EOI.
Okay, so really anyone can get involved. So who is it that can nominate these people? Can you nominate yourself? Do you have to be a member of the business? What way does it work, Roger?
Anyone can nominate.
Okay.
You know, we're looking for ambitious entrepreneurs. Entrepreneurs who are doing something new, they're innovating, they're taking risks. You know, you might be with that entrepreneur, you might work with the entrepreneur, you might be a stakeholder, a customer, a supplier of the entrepreneur, or it might be, you know, your family, brother, sister, husband, wife. Critically, it's men and women. Quiva, women can be slower to put up their hand and say, I'm a brilliant entrepreneur, I should be part of this unique alumni, and we're really calling on female entrepreneurs to step forward or to be nominated by folks. And of course, it's right across the island. So, you know, as well as Dublin and Kildare and Leinster, it's, you know, the whole of the south of Ireland, but also the north of Ireland as well. We're very proudly an all-Ireland programme.
Okay, so there's three award categories and then you choose eight, well, not you specifically, Roger, but a panel of judges choose eight finalists per category. Can you give us an idea of each category and what you'd be looking for in it?
Sure. Look, the emerging category is younger businesses. So businesses, typically they're over a couple of years old, so beyond absolute startup stage, but younger than 7 years old. And these are companies that they may be pre-revenue, they may be, they may have a couple of million euros of revenue, but they're very innovative ideas, you know, the potential to grow very quickly and challenge or disrupt markets in an interesting way or sectors in an interesting way. Our established businesses, they're more traditional businesses. You know, typically they'd be good employers. They've been around for a period of time. The majority of their trade will be in Ireland and the UK. You know, a lot of family businesses, a lot of stable sectors in there. Of course, stable sectors doesn't mean you don't have to be very entrepreneurial and very innovative to survive in the changing times we live in. That's the established category. And our international category are those Irish businesses that are pushing the boundaries around the world and, you know, building companies that are making differences in foreign markets or where their primary customers are international.
Okay. So you'd really only be eligible for one category per nomination. Is that right?
Well, it's interesting, actually. Very, very often companies might easily fit into more than one. And if that's the case, you know, the process, how it works is you'll nominate yourself online, but then all nominees will have a conversation with a partner or a person from EY, and we'll help the person navigate their nomination form, and we'll make sure they land in the category where they've got the best chance of, you know, demonstrating and showing off their business in the best possible way.
Okay.
And if I could just add, there's a distinct from the three categories, we've a sustainability award, something we launched last year for companies that are directly through the product or service or indirectly through how they've transformed their industry or sector, making a real difference to the natural world and environmental sustainability. And that's an important, I think it's an important area that entrepreneurs will be a big contributor to the answers we all need.
Okay, so someone can be nominated for the Sustainability Award as well, or is it just someone who's already in one of the other categories?
Correct, that's taken from the other categories.
Right.
And really the thinking behind that is the vast majority of great companies will have to be thinking about sustainability now.
Okay, so if you do want to nominate someone or nominate yourself, you can put yourself down for two categories if you think you fit in that, and then you will put them in the right one for the end kind of result. Is that right?
Absolutely. Okay. We'll help them find the right place.
So, Roger, what's in it for someone if they do apply and they make it to the final 24?
The main prize, and EOY is not a competition. We, you know, sometimes people refer to, you know, the big gala awards night and the trophy on RTE at the end of the year. Actually, it's a year-end programme. The real prize is becoming part of an alumni group, which is now 580 entrepreneurs, a really unique group that you can only get into by being selected as a finalist by, you know, the judging panel of your peers. There's no financial obligations, there's no cost, there's no membership. Once you're a finalist, you're in, and you're in for life. This group of people are truly inspirational. And they're collectively, they employ about 250,000 people across the island of Ireland. They have a huge contribution, not only to our economy, but to societies and communities in every single county. They mentor each other, they trade with each other to an extraordinary level, and they even invest in and with each other. So, entrepreneurship and leadership in business can be a lonely place, and this is an incredible like-minded peer group for entrepreneurs to join. Adds huge value to their business.
Okay, so
the highlight of our year, Cuiva, will be our international retreat.
Okay.
We'll take folks off to Singapore in May and really immerse them in a completely new market, and get them away from the desk and get them thinking about their businesses in a very, very different way.
Wow, so basically a lifetime of networking. And it's something that I know it's kind of coming a little bit more prominent now, but it's something you hear the Americans talking about all the time, like, the network and to network and do this and that. But I suppose we're a little bit more shy and reserved over here sometimes about putting ourselves forward. So if someone does want to nominate a friend or someone they work with or even themselves, Roger, how do they go about doing it?
The easiest place to do it is ely.ie. And you'll also see links from myself, Roger Wallace, and our EOI LinkedIn page, which will help you if that's an easy channel for you, or you'll see that addressed across the national media today and over the coming weeks.
Okay, that's brilliant. That's Roger Wallace there, partner lead for EY Entrepreneur of the Year Ireland. Nominations are now open and they are open until the end of March. Is that right, Roger?
2nd of March.
2nd of March. So you have about 6 weeks there to get any of your nominations in. Thank you very much, Roger, and we'll talk to you again soon. Now, my next guest is, I'm sure, buzzing to come on and talk to me about his adventures, because with the increasing interest in biodiversity and pollination, would you like to learn more about bees? Maybe you'd like to become a beekeeper. And Louis Bulger is club chairman of South Kildare Beekeepers, and he joins me on the line now. Good afternoon, Louis.
Fine, thank you. Nice to have a chat with you, Cuiva.
Louis, tell us a little bit about beekeeping in general.
Beekeeping in general? Well, it's one of those, if you wanted to call it a hobby, that it just hooks you and you can't get away from it. I'm very passionate about it.
Okay. And what does it involve? Like, if someone's out there and they want to get into beekeeping, is it very time consuming? Does it cost a lot of money?
Well, I suppose it's how much you need to invest into it. How to get into it? I would suggest my first thing would be to say, look, get involved straight away into the local association, SKBA. South Kildare Beekeeper Association. That would be your first thing, to learn the basics of beekeeping first.
Okay, okay. So yourself, when did you get involved in beekeeping?
Oh, God. when I was in school, believe it or not, nearly in short trousers.
What age were you then?
Oh, God, it would have been, I suppose, about 14, 15 years of age.
You were 14 when you became a beekeeper. And what drew you to it?
I was just fascinated with them. I was fascinated with, you can be so basic about how to manage your bees. But then as life went on, I found, with experience, I found there's a little more I can do, improve things. And you just stay improving. It's just like, I won't say it's like a drug, but you just get hooked into it. You just love your pets, and that's it.
Okay, pets. I don't think many people would think of bees as pets, Louis. But if you want to think that, just I'm not sure, Louis, if you have me on loudspeaker there, the line is a little bit broken.
Okay, I will go. I just take it off the line.
Because it's just a little bit broken. But Louis, you have a few people within the South Kildare Beekeepers Association that have won prizes for their honey. Isn't that right?
Yes. The club itself was established in around the 1930s.
Mm.
And at that stage, later on, a Thai club was the first to produce world-class honey. Now, it's not not just Irish honey, but world-class honey. The two people that were really involved in that were Michael Moore and Brother O'Farrell.
From
a Thai. They were the honey producers, and also then became honey judges themselves.
Okay. And how do you get promoted to that?
Well, how did they get promoted, you say, is it? Well, I suppose if you have the right goods and able to produce it, which they did, they proved themselves that they're well up for it.
Okay.
So it is.
What would you be looking for? Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, well, in turn for what they were, they ended up being my mentors.
Okay. And they taught you everything you know.
They taught me everything, gave me the kickstart and where, what not to do. And now I want to pass it on to the new beginners that are coming along.
Okay. What would you be looking for then in a honey? Like if you were, I know you're not a judge yourself, but what's the, I suppose, best things to be looking out for if you were a judge?
Well, if I was looking for a judge, there's a big gap between, I suppose, honey that you can buy in shops or whatever and the honey that you can buy from beekeeper. If you pick up your jar of honey that's in shop or whatever, read the label. It'll say blended with EU and non-EU honey.
Okay.
That's telling you a lot. It's blended. It's mixed.
Okay.
The word says it itself. If you pick up my honey or the beekeeper's honey, it is straight from the hive. It is straight from the hive. You couldn't ask for better food. It'll never go off. It's a shelf life. It just doesn't go off. It's the only food that's produced without a carbon footprint.
Okay.
So this is what got my interest in it. And I just said, I'd love to get involved in that. That I did.
Okay. And Louis, like, if you want to be a beekeeper, is there an area that you do it? Or, like, do people have to have a garden and do it from their own garden? Or what way does that work?
Not necessarily. There's several ways. You can become a beekeeper. There's people who have done the course and they even themselves that they, say, I'd love to do the course, but I don't want anything to do with bees. So, they can plant forage for bees to help out that way. To become a beekeeper, would you need property? No, they don't need it. They just need somewhere quiet that bees are not going. They need a bit of space. Well, it's in space, but they need somewhere nice and quiet and basically to walk away themselves.
Okay, so like if you live in a housing estate and you had a small garden, would you be able to have bees in the back?
In a way, yes, you could. They won't really bother you. Like there are native black bee. We're into breeding those as well. They're a quieter bee. They're more docile and stuff like that. If you have a wicked hive, it's very easy. Just change the queen. It just quietens them down.
Right.
But you know what I mean? It's just common sense. Look, you have to walk with them. You know what I mean? You don't tell them what to do. They tell you what to do and be nice and gentle with them.
Right, okay. So, like, how many bees would you have at one time? I'm totally... I haven't a clue now. I've never...
Yes. Well, a beehive, you could have about 250,000 bees in a beehive.
Wow. Okay. And have you ever been stung?
Yes, is the answer. Yes. You'd say, is it sore? You would say, bedad. But if you come along, I often say to people, if you get stung, don't panic.
Okay.
Don't panic. But just, we would use a hive tool. But if you have a sharp object, say like a penknife or something like, or a bank card, get under the sting and lift it out. Don't pinch it out with your hands because you're injecting the sting into you.
Right. Okay.
And when you remove the sting, it's gone.
Yeah. Yeah. And tell me this, would you have all the protective gear? Like, would you have the little heads, the...
I have, yeah.
You have everything?
Yes, I do. And the lenses, then the lenses you get the lenses over-anxious. I would go good few times. Yes, I might throw on a veil that I wouldn't have the bodysuit with it. You know, depending on what you're going to get involved. You're getting fully into a hive, get fully tugged out. Yes.
Right.
Other than that, it all depends on your bees. It depends on the weather. If you go walk at your bees in bad weather, it's like, the bees going to get annoyed. Do you know what I mean? So that way, if the conditions are right, everything's right, bees will be quiet.
Okay. So tell us about the course that's coming up then for people. I'm sure there's people out there who want to become a beekeeper. Now, I can't say, Louis, that I'm interested in it myself, but tell me
about...
Well,
you're welcome to come along, believe it or not. There's no problem there.
€65 for the course. Is that it?
Yes. There are six courses. There's six lectures within this.
Right. Go on.
So the colonies, beekeeping equipment, the frame making, forage, disease, and swarm control.
Okay, so there's different aspects.
On the 5th, yes, it does. It starts on the 15th of February.
February.
Yes, they can contact the
SKBA, South Clare Beekeeper Association, and there's a website there, and they can look up that, and they can, after that, then they will, everything's organised for them.
Okay, so
it is a brilliant course. It really and truly is.
South Kildare Beekeepers.
South Kildare Beekeeper Association, yes.
.org. You can get them online. It's the 15th February. It starts €65, which is a pretty good price. How many weeks is it over?
It's over 6 weeks.
Okay.
And with that, then they'll also be brought to our local apiary, where they will get hands-on knowledge of working with bees. So when they're finished with that, they can come along and they know then whether they'll be capable or not of having their own bees and managing them. But they're never just left alone, out to say, well, the course is finished, now you're over. But if they want it, then they can also do an exam after, which is optional.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So now you have a certificate for doing your course as well.
Okay.
And it's minor, it's fairly basic. It's good fun. It's good fun. It's not. It's a bit of fun. It's interesting. It is interesting.
Okay, well, that is Louis Bulger there, Club Chairman of the South Kildare Beekeepers, encouraging more people to take up beekeeping. Holding training courses, you can find them online, southkildarebeekeepers.org. Thanks very much, Louis. The government today is to launch its three-year, €100 million EV charging strategy aimed at specifically seven types of people, from a female taxi driver to a female retired urban dweller. Not sure why they're all female, but Geraldine Herbert, motoring editor with the Sunday Independent, is here to tell us all about it. Good afternoon, Geraldine.
Good afternoon.
Geraldine, what's this about the female taxi drivers and female retired urban dwellers?
Yeah, I thought this was an interesting one. They basically have, I think it's seven different people, and they're trying to, I suppose, just encompass all possible and potential EV drivers and try and set up scenarios for each of them. But I suppose the key thing is it's a €100 million investment. It's desperately needed in the public charging infrastructure over the next 3 years. And I'm sure there's many EV car drivers who are going, God, it's about bloody time at this stage now, because it really is needed.
Because we actually heard from a taxi driver here, I think it was north of the county, maybe somewhere in Selbridge, and he used to drive down the M4 down to somewhere like Kinnegad and charge there because there was only one charger where he lived. So like, it is crazy, like, to expect people to move over to an electric vehicle, but then we don't have the infrastructure for it.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's incredibly patchy around the country. There are places that, you know, are much better served than others, but definitely nationwide we don't have a good nationwide public charging network. But what I find extraordinary is that in 2019, when they announced that they were going to ban the sale of new petrol and diesel cars by 2030 and at the same time put 950,000 electric vehicles on the road, why the investment wasn't made then? Because at least then we would be reaping the rewards now. Instead, we're going to be playing catch-up for the next few years, because great and all as these plans are, they're not going to happen overnight. They are going to take time to roll out. And in the meantime, there are people who are not buying EVs because they don't trust the network as it is at the moment.
Yeah, like, playing catch-up is definitely something that the government tend to be doing with this. And in relation to the amount of chargers then, like 60 kilometres, every 60 kilometres we're going to have them. How many though? Like, is it just going to be one guaranteed every 60 kilometres?
No, what they're talking about are fast charging hubs. That is a really good idea. But the other thing that really needs to happen, and I think it's actually more important, are these kind of destination chargers that no matter where you go, you'll be able to top up your car. So whether you go to the cinema or you go shopping for a couple of hours or you're in a hotel overnight or you're in a restaurant, that you can constantly top up, because that's the kind of thing we need to look at. It's not so much replicating the filling station network around Ireland. We need to just think of it as our mobile phone, that we'd be topping it up regularly. So you're topping it up whenever you can, where you can, and therefore you're not relying on, you know, having to charge from 0 to 80% anywhere, because you're constantly just, you know, availing of chargers. So that's what you really need, is a widespread amount of these, you know, destination chargers literally everywhere you go.
Of course, we've seen the change happen and the transition from, you know, petrol and diesel cars and the EV cars come in more so in urban areas. Geraldine, do you think maybe this new infrastructure might encourage people in rural areas to make the switch?
Yeah, I think it should, definitely, because this is, you hear this constantly, that, you know, there's parts of the country, particularly rural areas, as you say, that aren't served well either with public transport or charging infrastructure, and that's why they rely much more heavily on their cars. So I would hope this would. The other thing, I suppose, about rural dwellings is they're probably more likely to have driveways and therefore to be able to install a home charger, and that really is a key issue in terms of making that switch. And at the moment, one of the things I don't see in the strategy document is how we're going to address the cost difference between charging on the public network and charging at home. If you're charging at home, you can avail of, you know, really good night rates, and it makes real financial sense to go electric. But if you're relying on the public network, given that it was the cost went up by 50% on the 20th of December, you know, it's pretty expensive to charge on the public network. And the gap between running a petrol or diesel car versus an EV is closing all the time as those prices continue to increase.
Yeah, I did read an article there recently, Geraldine, that at one stage, people driving a petrol car or having an EV car, it was near enough the same to top them up, say.
Yeah, as I said, like, if you're doing it at home, it really is very, there's huge savings to be made. But the public charging network is not cheap. So there is a mention in the report about local neighbourhood charging. So it'd be interesting to know, will they be able to avail of the very cheap domestic rates, or how will that work? Because that's something we really have to address, because at the moment, people who don't have access to a driveway are being discriminated against, and there isn't a great incentive to go EV.
Yeah, no, definitely. Just in relation to the second-hand car market, Geraldine, that appears to have gotten over that bump in the road, and Dundeal saying now that the prices are up 70% higher compared to the onset of the pandemic, and that price inflation has finally slowed to more normal levels. What would you think of that?
Yeah, I think we're finally, I suppose there's two issues with the car market at the moment. One is Brexit. Imports are down, I think it's 59% since 2019. So UK imports would have been a huge source of second-hand cars. So they're gone. That's not going to change. So that's going to continue to be an issue. But the second thing was there was a delay with new cars coming into the country, and that was just a supply issue. It was down to chip shortages. It was also down to the Ukraine war had disrupted supply chains. Now, that's showing signs of recovery, and that's probably what's been seen in the second-hand market, but it's still going to be an issue through 2023, so it's going to be slowly changing. But if you're in the market for a second-hand car and you don't have a car at the moment and you're buying into it, that's where you have a huge issue. If you have a second-hand car and you're trading up, you're going to benefit from the increase in prices. You know, it'll probably be cancelled out by the increase in the price of the car you're going to buy, but at least there's something there to trade off. But if you're trying to get into the market, it's still an issue with the high prices.
Yeah, because I looked up what my car was worth, and I bought my car like 2.5 years ago, still worth the same money. So, you know, good savings for me.
You had an appreciating asset in your driveway, which is bizarre.
Yeah, it's great. It's great news for me. But that is Geraldine Herbert there, motoring editor of the Sunday Independent. And with that news that the government is planning to introduce high-powered electric vehicle chargers every 60 kilometres across the nation's motorway network. And as Geraldine was saying there, we'll have to have a look at what the prices are going to be, because of course, if you have a domestic charger, you're getting a much lower rate of electricity, whereas if you're charging just on the go, it could cost you a lot more. Thank you very much to Geraldine there for joining us. That's all we have time for today. I'll be back again at the same time tomorrow.